Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast. We're online at soundcheck.org.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's not every day that my producers won't let me enter our Soundcheck studio without having earplugs in. I do, after all, wear headphones over my ears. But today, the punk band Perfect Pussy is here, and not only do I have earplugs in underneath my headphones, but the band actually gave them to me. And it looks like I'm going to need them. Perfect Pussy has a new album out. It's called Say Yes to Love. And they are going to start us off with a couple of tracks from that album, beginning with Advance Upon the Real. Here's Perfect Pussy, live on Soundcheck.
Check. I am the mutation, willing to fight fair, willing to come in, villain, perfect, perfect.
Yeah.
That is a live set that's actually three songs in one from the band Perfect Pussy. We began with Advance Upon the Real, kind of segued into Number Four, and then segueing again into a song called Work. Let me introduce you to the members of the Syracuse-based band. Meredith Graves on vocals.
Hi.
Sean Sutkus playing keyboards.
Hello.
We've got Garrett Koloski behind our drum kit, Ray McAndrew playing guitar, Greg Ambler playing the bass. And this is, I mean, Meredith, you're not quite voice as instrument thing, although it is just a kind of a part of the texture, the way the album is mixed and the live show happens.
Yeah.
How is your voice? There wasn't much there in that behind that, yeah.
Yeah. we've been on tour for effectively the last 4 months. We had a few weeks off in February, but I say that with huge air quotes because we played shows during that time. So we've been grinding since like October.
Yeah.
Once now, people decided they wanted to hear our band, we never stopped.
So you missed most of winter in Syracuse.
Yes, but we found it everywhere else, trust me.
So there are lyrics,
yes.
You know. So as I say, it's not like one of these where the voice is purely an instrumental thing. There's a text, there's mm-hmm. stories. This is also a kind of music of extremes, and in Advance Upon the Real, the version that's on the record, mm-hmm. the kind of minute-long squall that begins is followed by a long kind of ambient thing, which you guys didn't play here in the studio. But, you know, what's the kind of the push and the pull between those two poles in this band's music?
I've been working on noise music for a while, and I really like synthesizer, drone sound, drone music, and that was it. And we wanted to add some of that in because we all bring something to the table in this band from our different backgrounds, and that was just what I got to do.
In a full set by the band, would there be some of those kind of ambient stretches? Does Meredith get to like take a breath and run?
Usually it happens at the end. I'll do improvised noise sets. Sometimes I'm doing distorted DJing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm just playing. I have a sampling keyboard, so I'll do ambient drones.
I also noticed that one device you were actually not touching. Do you have like a theremin thing over there?
It's a light sensitive resistor that controls my rate of my phaser pedal because it has a CV input on it.
So by putting your hand, by cutting off or allowing more light to hit the thing, it
exactly.
changes.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And I actually just got that. A friend of mine, Nate Iseland, made it for me. He's a musician from Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. So, Meredith, since you do go to the trouble of, you know, writing at what are very poetic lyrics on a lot of these songs, why are they, you know, kind of not front and center in the sort of conventional songwritery way?
Well, I tend to see the lyrics and their actual vocalization as being two different components to the band. Reading along with hardcore records is something that I've been doing since I was a kid. And there are as many different styles as there are of hardcore music. One general continuum through them is that the lyrics can be unintelligible because mm-hmm. of the way the singers choose to vocalize. So never having had the opportunity to sing in a straightforward hardcore band, as straightforward as this band is, it was something I wanted to experiment with. I found I always listened more closely when I was reading along. I'm big into reading. And also because on the flip side of that, it's more egalitarian to me when I'm less of a front person and more of an instrument, which is another reason why Sean, Ray, Greg, and I are always kind of in the front of the stage together during a mm-hmm. live performance, is because I like the idea that it is four incredibly talented people and me up on stage all at the same time. And it's kind of like a circus, you know, you don't really know where to look.
Yeah.
There's a ballerina on an elephant and the elephant is balancing a ball and there's a clown riding under the elephant. And I want it to be that confusing visually. So.
Have we lost that? You know, with digital files where you don't have the lyrics and people are just kind of listening and can't read along.
Well, in a way, I think that's nice too. But you can ask me anything, and I'll tell you it's all nice. I'm a pretty agreeable human being. There's also something to be said for being confused in a world that's a little too accessible.
Hmm.
You can Google nearly anything you want. Well, I heard something great recently, which is if a time traveler from the 1950s came back and saw smartphones, they would think that we had a device that fit in our pocket that was capable of explaining to us all of human history and all the knowledge accessible to humans, and then they would see that we use it to pick fights with strangers and look at pictures of cats. And they would get really angry. So maybe inaccessibility is kind of a cool thing.
We're speaking with the members of the Syracuse band Perfect Pussy. You mentioned Meredith being on the road for 4 months. You guys played South by Southwest. You were part of the NPR showcase. Were you guys playing the night of that terrible car accident that took 4 lives?
We were.
Where were you?
We were a block away from, we were at Stubbs, that's where our show was, and we left Stubbs, and then the accident had just happened, and we kind of walked by everything, and we're kind of looking.
How soon were you on the scene?
I saw people getting, like, CPR and stuff like that. We were right there. It had just happened to the point where I was like, we should walk away from this because, you know, we're not going to help anybody and we need to, it appeared as if the person was still like on the loose or whatever. So we got out of there as fast as possible.
You mean the driver?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did that do to the atmosphere of the festival?
It made you question your reason for being there.
It made us question our reasons for being there.
Yeah.
That was the problem with the entire situation, is that by our show was at the Mohawk the next morning, and thankfully it was canceled, and we were really happy about that because we didn't feel it was appropriate. Mm-hmm. But by the third day, I said this to a friend, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. By the third day, I was seeing people finishing cans of beer and throwing them on the ground and littering on the intersection where people had died 48 hours before. And that was when I said to myself, I never, ever, ever want to go to a music festival again. Mm. It sucked.
So it wasn't all the corporate branding and stuff. It was. It seems like the enduring memory of South By for 2014 is going to be that tragedy.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I think Greg made a really good point when he was talking about his feelings, Greg, our bass player, talking about his feelings about the festival, that was what kind of exemplified it for him too, was the fact that it just seemed like people had forgotten about it already, like it was problematic. I want the memory of this year, because as he had said to me and to the rest of our band, the fact that the accident happened was a direct result of the festival. The two were inextricably linked. It didn't feel like a fluke. The two were connected.
Mm. So on to a happier touring note. I mean, you guys have been all over the place. What town surprised you? Where did you go in thinking, we'll do a show, and it turned out to be like an awesome place and an awesome crowd? Sean?
McAllen, Texas was the greatest city in the world. It's a border town right on the border of Texas and Mexico, and they have a big festival every year called the Galaxy Fair.
Uh-huh.
And we went and played with Creaturas and Power Trip.
I was so confused. I thought you were talking about Marfa. I'm like,
no.
Wait, no, that wasn't that good.
No, McAllen. They have a festival every year in McAllen, and bands come from all over the country and some from over the world. And there's two locations this year. There was a nightclub called La Bruja Luna that was doing a punk show, and then across the street at the famous, 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 historically super important Cine del Rey. They had the bigger shows over there. And the people we met were absolutely amazing, our friends Edgar and Andy and Patrick and everyone that was down there. The other bands that played were amazing. Learning about the history of McAllen, Texas, and the history of the Cine del Rey and the scene down there, absolutely amazing. The reception we received was incredible, and I think we've stayed in good touch with the people we've met there. I cannot wait to go back. I want to see my friend Edgar. I miss him a lot.
That seems to be part of, you know, people who are outside the hardcore scene have this kind of image of it being a sort of bristling, unfriendly group of people. There's a real sense of community within the scene. I mean, what you're saying, Meredith, is not surprising, you know, to anybody who's ever traveled at all in that circuit.
True. But you have to be very careful because, at least in my experience, yes, I want to agree with you, and experiences like McAllen make me say, yes, absolutely, the hardcore scene, there is a community, there are people that have each other's backs, great. 3/4 of the experiences I've had in the hardcore scene have absolutely disproved that.
Is that because you are a woman?
Entirely possible. It's also because I...
That is one thing.
That is a key component. Yeah. I am also a notorious pain in the ass, which might also color my experiences in the hardcore scene, that I am an easily unlikable human being. That might also color my experiences. I have to admit that.
Now, let me ask. How annoying is it that, you know, some great publications like the New York Times will talk about your music and not mention the name of your band?
I don't care.
I don't mind.
I don't care at all.
I don't really care. It's their problem, not mine.
And yet, you
seems
know,
like they have something they need to work on.
Well, article after article about Pussy Riot, but
if we did anything 1/18th as great as what Pussy Riot's done for the world, I would be butthurt about it. But since we haven't done anything even remotely approximating that, I will just be happy that there was a picture of me on the New York Times website. I could send that to my mom, and she clapped, and everyone felt great. I could care less. I don't care what they call our band. Yeah. I do not.
Now, Meredith, you did an interview with Toby Vail from Bikini Kill, interviewed you.
Yeah.
For the website Wondering Sound.
Yes.
I mean, were you a Riot girl as a youngster?
No, not at all.
So what was that like for you? I mean, you talked before about learning the history. I mean, certainly that's a musical history you must be pretty familiar with now.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a really small town, so a lot of my early access to punk in a city where there was no scene was reading historical books about it. My dad's a big reader. He's a big music listener, and he always provided me with, you know, Lex McNeil and Greil Marcus, and there were all these histories of, like, In the Fascist Bathroom and England's Dreaming and all these huge books that were a historiography of Western punk and then the UK punk. But two things I never really learned about were the totally non-homogenous history of women in punk and the history of punk globally. And there were texts that have been published within the last 10 years about Riot Girl, scholarly texts. And so I did start reading about it then. I did listen to it a little in high school. But Riot Girl, for how important it was historically, also was a scene that served like 50 people in two cities and was really focused on cisgender women, white women, privilege, like women with a certain amount of privileges. I don't want to downplay its importance to the history of music, mm-hmm. but when modern bands like us and other bands get compared to being Riot Girl bands, that's kind of like calling contemporary bands grunge bands. That happened 20 right. years ago.
Right.
We need to create a new history for punk that involves women and non-male people so we don't have to keep returning to terms that went out of cultural fashion 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, now let me, you know, you mentioned the use of terms. Now, you've used both non-male and cisgender.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, how we're in kind of a state of flux, it seems, with our language, mm-hmm. with the way we approach gender.
Hopefully.
So for folks who are not familiar with the term cisgender.
Cisgender people are people whose biological birth assignation matches up with the gender they experience life through. The idea, it's awful that I'm on the radio right now. If you point at your head, mm-hmm. think gender. If you point between your legs, say sex. Mm-hmm. Your sex and your gender are not the same thing. Cisgender refers to a person whose head and pelvis line up along the same lines. And when I say the term non-male people, what I mean to clarify is non-cis male people. I'm not necessarily including trans men or non-binary men when I make that statement. I'm specifically talking about cisgender men.
So, you know, once you get into that sort of thing, I mean, the problem becomes how do you kind of spread, how do you not make it into another thicket of jargon that is, you know, difficult for outsiders to sort of get into and be part of?
Well, speaking in a way that normalizes it, being willing to explain your terms and using it as another key component of language that's imperative to the everyday survival of people to whom those terms are extraordinarily important. Mm-hmm. Basically, meeting the basic standards of human decency.
Good. Well said.
Pretty easy.
The band is Perfect Pussy. Their album is called Say Yes to Love. It is out now. It's got to be, what, 22, 23 minutes, Sean?
It's exactly 23 minutes long.
23 minutes.
Yeah.
And yet it is sort of a complete statement from the band, it seems.
Yes. Yeah.
What happens next?
We're going to go travel the world and hopefully have some great experiences along the way.
Meredith, you looking at this for the long haul, or
no? I have to get a wisdom tooth out next week, so we'll see if I live through that first.
All right, now Meredith, you recently wrote a piece for Rock Torch, another website, about Cool Keith's album Black Elvis Lost in
My
Space.
Favorite. Yeah, I love Cool Keith. I love Cool Keith.
Well, what is it? First of all, when did you kind of stumble upon this record?
When I was in college. It was my first trip out to the West Coast with my then partner. I met a friend of his in the Pacific Northwest who was a sex worker who had done a show with Cool Keith, who had danced on stage with him, and was over the moon about the fact that she was in his top eight on MySpace at the time. So I had heard Dr. Octagonicologist, and she...
Which was his better-known record,
record, yeah. ...to that yeah. point. But then in 1999, he did this album called Black Elvis Lost in Space. And when I went to sort of investigate more of his work to sort of, because she was so cool, I was like, I want to do everything this woman does. She's so rad and just like strong. I said, okay, I'm going to go listen to Cool Keith. And for whatever reason, I picked up Black Elvis. And the way that he uses words on that record, there is not another record like that in existence in the course of history. Every time I hear it, I catch something new, and it makes me so happy.
Actually, let's hear a little bit from Cool Keith and Lost in Space. We've been speaking with and listening to the members of the Syracuse band Perfect Pussy. And to the five of you, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us and playing for us.
Thanks for having
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
Last bulletin, Keith still solo with no manager. Time clock out, studios need the block out. Here's my number, call me direct. Get no feedback, no interviews. Channel 4, see me on the news. Erase your message, walk streets.
By the way, we shot video of today's session. Find it at soundcheck.org. And if you subscribe to WNYC's YouTube channel, we'll update you every time we post new videos. That does it for this installment of the Soundcheck podcast. Thanks for listening. 7-Eleven, this guy's like Shakespeare with blue chrome behind your ear. My George Washington robe, I still travel the globe on Pan Am Air flights. I roll in cities after midnight, stand in your lobby unsuspected. You get neglected, traffic was hectic.